Hello, and welcome to the deep end of public education. My name is Kristen Grubbs, and I'm happy you're allowing me the opportunity to share with you. If you've listened to my little introduction clip, you already have an idea why I started this podcast. But seeing as how this is the first full episode, I will briefly explain. Like many other moms and dads across the country, the last couple years were really eye-opening as I paid closer attention to what was going on in my local school district. Our school board's discussion and choices over masks and quarantines didn't set well with me. November of 2021, my mind was blown. It was difficult to listen to the nonsensical backwards discussions that led to ridiculous decisions that blanketed our city with discriminatory demands and restrictions. I was done playing along. Since then, I've worked hard to find out what's really going on in my local school district, and in doing so, I have read so many reports and met others who have evidence of the same unethical practices and downright gaslighting in districts nationwide. My research continues, and the deeper I dig, the more I distrust the district in which I received my entire K-12 education. I remember my time in the district fondly. As long as I can recall, my hometown has been a destination for young families because of the school district. People specifically moved here because of the school district's reputation. That is not the case anymore. In the last several years, unbeknownst to this mama, things have dramatically shifted. I'd heard of terms like equity here and there, but never thought anything of it. Over the last couple years, words like diversity and inclusion and belonging joined the equity movement in our district. Then I started to hear phrases like critical race theory, better known as CRT, and social emotional learning, or SEL. My eyes have been opened, so I'm here to share what I've learned and continue to learn so we as parents and voters can be better informed. After all, public school runs on our tax dollars, and our school board members are public servants, so they answer to us. Last but not least, these are our babies they're supposed to be educating. So it's up to us to protect them when the system put in place to teach them basic subjects begins pushing ideologies that promote division and destruction. My hope is that we can come together as parents and concerned citizens to raise awareness to these grave matters so we can be the most informed as possible when making choices that affect our children's educational future. Okay, now that we've got that out of the way, I want to invite you to swim with me into the deep end of public education. As you tread with me, I'm going to ask you 5 questions. I want you to really listen to these questions and think about how you might respond. 1, how well do people at your place of work understand you as a person? 2, how much do you matter to others at your workplace? 3, at your place of work, how often do people from different races, ethnicities, or cultures hang out with each other? 4, how often do you think about what someone of a different race, ethnicity, or culture experiences? 5, how well does your employer help employees speak out against racism? Now I'm going to repeat them, but I want you to consider how each of your children may respond to them if asked at school. 1, how well do people at your school understand you as a person? 2, how much do you matter to others at this school? 3, at your school, how often do students from different races, ethnicities, or cultures hang out with each other? 4, how often do you think about what someone of a different race, ethnicity, or culture experiences? 5, how well does your school help students speak out against racism? Looking at it in a new light now, what do you think of that line of questioning? Would you be okay with your employer asking you questions like this? Are you okay with your child being asked questions like this by your school district? Some of you may not find harm in these types of questions, so why these seem alarming to me, I'll break each one down for you. The first one, how well do people at your school understand you as a person? Is asking a student to know how others understand them. This is unknowable by the student. I cannot answer how well others understand me. To find out, I would have to ask them. The second one, how much do you matter to others at the school? Similarly, asks something that the student being asked cannot answer. I don't know how much I matter to others unless I ask them. This line of questioning is really asking the student how much do they feel like they matter to others. That's a very different question. Someone who's depressed may not feel like anyone thinks they matter. But I will tell you what, when I was in school, there were people I deeply valued, but I rarely told them that. Maybe a student I shared a writing class with who knew how to make words dance, or a fellow student in my art class whose style was different from mine, but so eye-catching. Or maybe even a student in my strings class who could effortlessly make an instrument sing. At the time, I may have admired these students for their skills and abilities, as well with others for their personalities or comedic gift, but I didn't necessarily feel comfortable enough, especially in my high school years, to be so forward as to tell each of them that they matter to me. Think about it for a moment. How many people can you think of that you would notice if they were no longer present? What if you show up at the gym to work out on your usual day and that one lady you've been observing from a distance, who first seemed uncomfortable and awkward, but more recently moved around the gym like a pro, having shed several pant sizes in the process, what if she just wasn't there anymore? You'd notice. You never told her you were watching and observing her hard work, logging it in your head as weekly measures of encouragement, but you cared. You grew to expect her diligence to encourage you in your workout as it triggered bigger dreams of health freedom for you. Another concern that I have with this question, as well as with the first one, is how it may affect students who are battling anxiety or depression. Having been through the pangs of depression as a young adult, I cannot even imagine being asked such intimate questions in middle or high school while trying to just survive life. I know in my district alone, this last school year, there were over half a dozen suicides of school-aged children. This is not the norm by any means. The last couple of years, with restrictions, shutdowns, and mask mandates, depression has definitely left its mark. So I ask, what in the world could asking these unanswerable questions provide that would make it worth the risk they carry? How can we expect our children to respond to such inappropriate question they honestly cannot answer? The third question. At your school, how often do students from different races, ethnicities, or cultures hang out with each other? Is a concern because it is based purely on social behaviors in the school. If society's goal is to rid our world of racism, why in the world would it matter how often students from different races, ethnicities, or cultures hang out with each other? What possible information could a school do with the answers to this question? What if the majority of students respond with, not often at all? What measures would the school take to change that? Is there a socially acceptable amount of diversity or inclusion that would provide an acceptable response to this question? Moving on. The fourth question asks, how often do you think about what someone of a different race, ethnicity, or culture experiences? My biggest concern with this question is how it asks about the frequency of thought on a topic. Why in the world does the school district need to know how often a student thinks about something? Our kids are at school to get a basic education in applicable subjects like math and reading and writing, science and history. As long as they are learning and making progress academically, why does it matter how often they are thinking about different races, ethnicities, or cultures? I see this question as a trap. If I were to respond by saying, often I think about it all the time, it implies that race, ethnicity, and culture are the lens through which I see the world and that I cannot see anything or anyone without filtering them through this lens. If I were to respond, not often at all, it implies that I never think about the experiences of other races, ethnicities, or cultures because I don't care. Either way, it can make a person sound racist. Either I can't think of someone without seeing them through the lens of race and such, or I look at them and I don't even consider their race and such. This is a false assumption because I'd submit to you that the person who says they don't think about the experiences of other races, ethnicities, or cultures may very well be the least racist person there is. Maybe they see Sam, the person struggling with marital troubles, not the black lady whose husband is cheating on her. Maybe they see Marie, the older lady who always smiles and waves when they walk by her house, not the Italian immigrant who speaks broken English. Maybe they see Jose as the guy from work who just hit 10 years sober, not the Mexican guy who grew up in a broken home. No matter how you spin it, this question about frequency of thought is an inappropriate attempt to manipulate what our kids think about. The last question, how well does your school help students speak out against racism, suggests that school is a place for activism. First, we have a working definition of racism is in this question. Interestingly enough, educational equity consultants, the company my local school district chose to contract with for professional development, states on their website, quote, racism is a complex system of beliefs and behaviors which are both conscious and unconscious, personal and institutional. They result in the oppression of people of color and benefit the dominant group. It is a system grounded in the presumed superiority of the white race. A simpler definition is prejudice plus power equals racism. End quote. If this is the definition we're working with, then this question is completely neglecting any form of racism against white people. Racism is way more broad than that. It can be practiced by anyone of any color or race against anyone that is of a different color or race. It is not specific to minorities. Presuming it is, especially in a public school setting, can alienate white students, assuming that they are the only possible aggressor. What useful information does the district expect to gain from student responses to this question? Are schools meant to be a place that promotes activism by one group of students against another group of students? How does the school choose which students to help? If we continue working with this definition of racism, this would suggest that the school is now being judged on how well they speak out against white students. How does this approach to racism create a healthier school environment? If the goal is to remove racism from the district, assuming racism is occurring on such a large scale that it becomes a high priority, there is a healthier way to do that without alienating those who are the current majority of the school population, at least in my district. A healthier approach would be to set rules and expectations as to how students are to behave at school. If someone is being mistreated based on their race, consequences for the behavior must be administered. And I mean administered fairly across the board. Outline expectations of behavior and make them the standard district-wide. Encourage those expectations, even reward students as well as teachers when they're being practiced. Expecting a school to be reactive by, quote, helping students speak out against racism, end quote, puts the school in activist mode. However, setting the standards of behavior that garner respect and self-control fosters an environment that prevents racism. When divisive and destructive behavior goes unchecked and undisciplined, it spreads like wildfire, and the whole system rots from within. This has got to be corrected, or the entire public school system will continue to decay. These five questions are only a sampling of what I found on the surveys utilized in my school district for the last 3 years. In fact, I was so disturbed by many of the questions found on these surveys, I created a video analysis of these questions and several others. You can find this analysis on my Facebook page called, you guessed it, Deep End of Public Education. When you get to the page, just click on the video tab near the top. After listening to the analysis, I'd love your feedback. You're welcome to comment directly to the video on there, or you can email me at mark4verse22@protonmail.com. That's M-A-R-K, the number 4, V-E-R-S-E, the number 22, at protonmail.com. Now that we've gone over a handful of the questions that are being pushed into schools across the country, let's take a step back and look at the bigger picture. What do you think the purpose of these questions is? What do you think the school districts expect to get from the responses collected? Panorama Education Inc., the genius behind these equity-based questions, says they can take the responses submitted, aggregate the data, and then disaggregate it into race, sex, or other demographics. When I first heard this description about their analysis capabilities, I was taken aback. I thought, how can they do that? Before I explain what I learned, let me catch you up to where my research had taken me at this point. I had already read the student surveys and scratched out my concerns to investigate. My big nagging questions were, where does the data go? What do they do with it? How is it analyzed? How can the responses provide usable data that is actionable? So when I heard a district administrator mention in a board finance meeting how the information can be broken down by demographics, I was hooked. What did she mean? How does Panorama get demographic information to be able to do this? At this point, it became necessary to contact the district office. I was directed to the district administrator in charge of the contract with Panorama, and her response was jarring. She said, and I quote, "There is a direct integration of our school information system with Panorama," end quote. I was floored. A direct integration? This meant that Panorama had my kids' demographic data from their student record. How is that even allowed? We thought these surveys were anonymous. This whole idea had me hurriedly trying to find answers. I still hadn't found all the details of how the data is used, and I now wanted to know more about the sharing of data. So I dug deeper. The surveys in our district can be divided into two parts. There's the social-emotional learning survey, or SEL, and there's the student climate and equity survey. There's more to share on the social-emotional learning survey, but I'll have to save that for another episode. The questions I broke down in this episode are from the student climate and equity survey, so I'll keep my attention on it for now. I learned that the responses on these and all the other questions on the student climate and equity survey are simply pooled, aggregated, disaggregated by demographic groups, and reports are then shared back with the district at the school level and at the district level. Principals can see how their students collectively answered without revealing the identity behind each response, and the district administrators can see not only how each school responded, but how the whole district collectively answered, again, without revealing individual responses. When I first heard this, I was relieved to know that students' identities were being protected. But then I realized that when a student is asked such an intimate question, certain students may need to be followed up with. To me, it seems negligent for a district to ask a student how much others understand them or if they matter to others at their school and then not follow up with those students who've responded negatively. Having been through depression, I know what lengths someone will go to not reveal their inner battle. I know how important it can be to save face and pretend like life is okay. If you ask my family or friends if they noticed my depression, they'll say they didn't. I'm the kind of person that can smile and laugh even though I'm dying on the inside. I could be planning my escape route from life while smiling and getting along with others at the same time. Using a cold survey done on a Chromebook, I might add, to make a student question their value and their place among their peers is not something you just gather data on to analyze. Those students who responded saying they don't matter to others at all and no one understands them, they need a one-on-one follow-up to ask them how they're doing. What did they mean by their answers? This would be an opportunity to gain insight into their struggle, to climb down into that hole of depression with them and empathize. Not following up, not asking questions, not sharing resources with that student and their parents regarding therapy or counseling outside of school is missing an incredible opportunity to save someone's life and possibly others. Think about it. I'm going to bring you back to my generation for a moment. My senior year was when the Columbine shooting happened in Colorado. How many times did people miss the signs, the opportunities to intervene in those boys' lives? How many times did people dismiss them rather than invest in them? Their destructive behavior and fatalistic approach to dealing with their problems took the lives of 12 other students and one teacher. What will come of the students that cried out for help by saying no one thinks they matter and no one understands them? How many students are neglected in my district and the 1,500 other districts that Panorama serves? I would hope that school districts across the country would do whatever they can to prevent such massacres, especially if all it might take is connecting with students, asking how they're doing and meaning it, then checking up on them. How then do the other questions I highlighted improve these particularly vulnerable students who may already be questioning their value in life? To me, it seems counterintuitive to make students question their connection with others, then promote an activist mentality in the school environment. If all of this is being done in the name of equity, then equity is not what our schools need. If equity means dividing and isolating students, making them feel devalued and questioning whether they're thinking about others' experiences enough or whether they have a diverse enough friend group, then equity can exit now. This brings me to this episode's title question. What is the purpose of these surveys? I hope I've given you some food for thought to nourish your synapses so you can come up with your own conclusion. All I ask is that you be willing to consider the questions I raised and hopefully do your own investigation. I'll dive into further detail on what I've learned about Panorama in the coming episodes. There's a lot to unpack, so I won't bog you down with all of it at once. If you have questions, you can shoot me an email at mark4verse22@protonmail.com or go follow my Facebook page, Deep End of Public Education, where you can shoot me a message or share what you've been learning. Join me on my next dive into the deep end when I share the deceitful ways in which school districts, in partnership with Panorama, are overriding parental authority regarding student records and data sharing. Thank you again for swimming with me in the deep end of public education. I pray you are growing in understanding and seeking truth and transparency in your school district. God bless.